Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Jy luister na die ABO-program Krag van die Bybel. En dit is heerlik om weer in die volgende uur of twee te luister eers na Bible Projects, se potgooi, en dan gaan ons ook self dan reflekteer. En dit alles gaan oor twee verse in Matteus 7. Hier waar Jesus besig is om die bergrede af te sluit. En vandag se potgooi van Bible Projects is getitel The Narrow and Wide Gates. Die nou en wye poorte en paaie. Woorde wat baie keer deur gelowiges mense gebruik word en ouers met hulle kinders en ook in prediking en lering baie dikwels hierdie woorde van Jesus gebruik die nou en die wye weg. Hierdie program gaan oor die lees van die Bybel. Hoe lees ons sodat ons die krag van die woord van die Here kan ervaar? Rustig word en luister na die lewende woord van God. Ek is Marius Skalekamp en dit is heerlik om hierdie pad saam met julle te loop. Die nou pad, hoopelik, glo ek, dat ons dit ook doen. Jy kan ook na die ABO webwerf gaan, abo.org.za, en gaan kyk na die verskillende kursusse wat beskikbaar is, of dan ook net as jy wil berading hê. Of jy kan Marietjie skakel by 084-501-1102. Jy kan ook inbel na Kaapse Kansel 021-180-5744. Jy kies dan hierdie optie vir berading en jy sal dan gelei word na 'n ABO-berader waar jy in konfidensialiteit kan gesels oor dit wat op jou hart lê, waarmee jy worstel en dan ook saam bid, saam met die berader, rondom dit wat op jou hart is. Ons gaan nou net na hierdie, luister die muziek en die potgooi van Bible Projects. Jesus sluit dan juist in by die bergpredikasie jy sy luisteraars hierdie keuse te bied, wat in drie dele geïllustreer word. Hierdie beskryf, die eerste deel, gaan oor hierdie twee poorte en die twee paaie. En Tim en John gesels dan hieroor en maak dan baie gedagtes oop vir ons. Die nou poort, wat so moeilik is om in te gaan, maar het maak die weg na die lewe oop. Die wye poort is maklik om te navigeer, maar het lei tot die ondergang. So, dit is so belangrik net om net rustig te word en te luister daaroor hoe hierdie twee manne wat deur die Here geroep is ook, en Tim wat baie diep studie en baie onderlê is ook in die oorspronklike tale en die woord. Om ons te help om te hoor dat hierdie woorde van Jesus, om daarna te luister en te besluit hoe ons by daardie punt kan kom waar ons ware roeping as mense kan uitlewe in ons daaglikse lewe. En hoe maklik wanneer ons die Here volg, daar ander paaie is wat makliker lyk. Ons gaan dan ook nadat die Bible Project potgooi gaan ons self reflekteer rondom hierdie. So wees rustig en neem hierdie tyd ook saam met die Here en saam met sy woord. Maak dit oop by Matteus 7 vers 13 en 14 en word ook deur die Gees gelei dan in sy woord en verryk om hierdie pad te kan loop as sy kinders. Ons gaan nou luister hierna na die potgooi van Bible Projects. Bly ingeskakel.
This is Bible Project Podcast, and this year, we've been reading through the Sermon on the Mount. I'm John Collins, and with me is co-host Michelle Jones. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, John. So we've been in this collection of teachings for many months, listening to Jesus give us a vision for living in right relationship with God and with others. Today, we begin the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount. And so, to remember how this all works together, let's do a quick summary.
The Sermon on the Mount began with a short introduction. Surprise! The kingdom of heaven has arrived, and the people taking hold of it are the outsiders, the unimportant, and the way they participate in it is through peacemaking and suffering.
Then comes the large main body of the Sermon on the Mount. Here's Tim.
The main central body began with Jesus saying, "We are going to fulfill the Torah and prophets by doing a greater righteousness. Good works that everybody will see and glorify the Heavenly Father and will be the city on the hill to be a vehicle for the Eden blessing to go out to the world." And it's happening, folks. Kingdom of heaven has touched down on earth.
How has the kingdom of heaven touched down on earth? Well, Jesus unpacks this main body in three steps. In the first step, Jesus shows us that God's wisdom for right relationships can be found in the Hebrew Bible. He looks at six examples of how Old Testament laws give us deep wisdom to help us see the danger of contempt for others, the danger of dehumanizing others, the danger of manipulating others, and a bold view of finding justice through generous and creative acts, even to our enemies.
Then Jesus turns his attention to religious practices of his day, and he explores the danger of doing the right things for the wrong reasons, what he calls hypocrisy, and he challenges his disciples to seek after the true reward.
Then in the third step, Jesus looks at our relationship with our stuff and our relationships with people. See, we like to store up things that bring us peace and security, but the stuff we store up on the land is not ultimately secure. Jesus challenges us to store up heavenly sky stuff, which can be found by living generously with others.
That's the three steps of the main body. This is the greater righteousness Jesus is calling his followers to.
This brings us to the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount. In light of all of this, how are you going to live?
Jesus is going to pivot. We are turning a corner from the main central body of the sermon into the conclusion. And he's going to say, folks, the stakes are high for this invitation that I'm giving to Israel right now.
The conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount has three teachings with three images.
One is about, hey, you have two gates you can go through and two roads you can go down. Then he's going to say, hey, watch out for false representatives, and uses a parable of two kinds of fruit trees. He's going to say, hey, you have two kinds of houses that you're building with your life. If you listen to me, you'll be building your house on the rock. You're either going to accept what I say or you're going to reject it. And there are collective consequences with high stakes.
The imperial power of their day was Rome. And Jesus knew that his friends and fellow Israelites were on a collision course, and it wasn't going to end well. But these teachings are not just for them in their day. These teachings are also the choice we have in front of us in our day.
And so the question will be, what's the decision for us reading Matthew's representation of the Sermon on the Mount? Three ways, think about one choice that Jesus is going to force his audience to face.
In today's episode, we'll look at the first image, the choice between two gates, a broad gate that leads to the wide open highway, or a narrow gate that leads to a small winding path. One leads to life, one leads to ruin.
Yeah, the way of Jesus will not just seem backwards, but offensive. It's a counterintuitive way that will lead to pressure from the outside, forcing you to be very discerning moment to moment as to what the way and the gate is.
Thanks for joining us.
Here we go.
First little parable about the choice is Matthew chapter 17, verses 13 and 14. I'll just go for it. Enter through the narrow gate. So apparently there's a gate. Apparently it's narrow, and I'm being called to enter through it.
Okay.
Why? Well, because wide is the gate, and also broad, of the road that leads to ruin. And those who enter through it are many. How narrow is the gate, and constricted, for the road that leads to life, and those who find it are few.
Yeah. So I have a picture of a gate in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe those listening along have a picture of a gate.
Oh yeah. Like of a fence?
Maybe like a gate into a fenced yard would be the most typical gate I would encounter.
Yeah. You know, gates and doors are the kinds of things that you might think are universal, and they are in one sense.
It's an entry point.
Yeah, an entry point into a space.
Yeah.
Whether it's a courtyard or a building or, yeah, going inside from going outside. But also there's a cultural relativity to the shapes and the symbolism connected to doors,
mm-hmm.
that they might have different resonances in different cultures. This struck me in new ways when Jessica and I were living in Jerusalem. If you go to Jerusalem today and you go to the old, where the walls are and gates, it's a medieval Jerusalem that you're seeing.
Okay.
But it has lots of older parts to it. It's like an archaeological site with many levels, you know, like you dig 10 feet down and you get 100 years ago and 10 more feet down. And
that's so wild how that happens.
But in Jerusalem, on the surface is medieval.
Okay.
And underneath the modern city is like the ancient
city.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So you go underground to see a lot of the ancient stuff in Jerusalem. But because of the people who built the medieval version of the city used stones and materials that were on hand,
like the
from
rubble.
The ancient city, that it's a lot of the materials of ancient Jerusalem that's built into medieval Jerusalem, which is what you can see today.
Wow. Okay.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah.
So all the same is, it is a whole maze of ornate, amazing doors and gates.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the whole city's made of big doors and gates and little doors and gates and medium doors and gates. And the medieval city has, you know, these walls. They're pretty tall. And so there's about half a dozen major gates that are entrances to the city.
And these would be like gates that are as large as a street.
Yeah. Yeah. Many of them you can drive a car through.
Yeah.
Some of them barely. And some of them are comfortably drive a car through. Yep.
These are like main entry points.
Yep. Main entry points.
Would these be the broad gates?
Yeah. Example of a broad gate.
Okay.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. So think big stone archway in a wall surrounding a city with thick, massive swinging doors, you know, that prevent attackers from getting in.
Yeah.
There is a wide gate that leads you onto a road. Because if you're leaving a city, then
the gate
is the beginning of a road.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy to get on that road. Mm-hmm. Fits a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's a well-worn road.
Yep. Well-worn road. Many people travel it. And paradoxically, that wide gate and broad road is actually going to lead to ruin.
Hmm.
But going the way that leads to life is going to involve a little more intentionality, a lot more intentionality, through a way that feels sometimes confining.
And even at times isolating?
Yeah, that's right. Because if it's a broad gate, you can go through shoulder to shoulder with lots of folks.
Yeah.
It's a narrow gate. You're going through one at a time.
You could be on the party bus on the broad gate.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
On that winding walking path.
Yeah, yeah.
Feel alone.
So look at Jesus has lined up the comparisons in these two parallel gates really precisely. So you have a wide gate and broad, and you have a road that leads to ruin with many. Then you have a narrow gate that's constricted with a road that leads to life, and there's few. So every item is juxtaposed.
Yeah.
Wide and narrow, broad and constricted, life and ruin, many and few. So that's not hard to understand. And it begins with saying, enter through the narrow gate.
Hmm.
So my way is the gate.
If you see a really well-worn path,
mm-hmm.
Jesus is saying that's not the road to life.
Excellent. Yes. And this is all a summary of what he just put in front of people. When the kingdom of God and heaven touches earth in through Jesus, and he calls Israel to become the renewed covenant city on the hill and a way of life that's very challenging. Everything he just called people to is very counterintuitive. Some of it resonates deep once you think about it, about loving your neighbor as you love yourself. But loving your neighbor as you love yourself across ethnic and cultural boundary lines, well, that's a little intense. Forgiving someone with turning the other cheek, you know, going the second mile, that's counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. But it's the way to life. So I think that's what he's capturing here.
There's something that captures the imagination about finding like a secret door.
Or a small door.
Small little hidden door.
Yes. Yeah.
And going, no one knows about this. Where is behind this door?
Yeah. Yep. Then there are also much smaller doors and gates all throughout the city. And some of them are just truly epic. Doors into synagogues, you know. So Jessica and I just started collecting pictures of cool doors and smaller gates in Jerusalem because it just, there many of them are just works of art. It's really cool. What I think is actually helpful is though to trace the Hebrew Bible roots of these two images of the entryway and of the road, because both of them, surprise, surprise, first appear in the Hebrew Bible related to the Garden of Eden. Those are the deepest roots of the imagery that Jesus is drawing upon here. Both the road and the door are connected from the Garden of Eden story and then just developed throughout the Hebrew Bible. And I think Jesus is drawing on all the links in the chain. So, shall we walk through some gates?
Yeah.
Down some roads?
Let's do it.
Okay. So you find in the Hebrew Bible and Jewish tradition a very general metaphor that is true cross-culturally, that life is a journey on a path, and that one's life choices are like moments where you make a decision at a fork in the road that takes you down a certain type of path and not another.
Yeah.
Like Psalm 1, the psalm concludes saying, "For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will lead to ruin." It's actually the match to what Jesus says about the gate that leads to ruin. So there's two ways. It represents the direction you're going because of the choices you're making. In other words, way here is shorthand for the life decisions that lead you along a certain path.
And so there's a way in which I live. It's a
way of life.
A way of life.
That's right.
If you're on a journey and you're making a series of decisions of where you're going, then you are creating a way of being.
That's right. Yep, that's right. So that's why you need to have the phrase, the way of the Lord. In Genesis 18:19, God says that he has called Abraham and his children and his house to keep the way of Yahweh by doing righteousness and justice. So Yahweh has a way. Which is interesting, sort of like, what, God's on a journey?
Yeah.
Well, but it's like, it's more as God goes about on a journey with creation through history, God has a way.
He's creating a way.
He has a method and a way of making decisions for how he relates that represents his way. And what is that? Well, it's doing right by others and doing what is just. So there's the way of the Lord, and then there's the way of the righteous, which is to align one's way with the way of the Lord. And then there's the way of the wicked, which is to deviate one's way from the way of the Lord. I think that's kind of how the paths work in the Hebrew Bible.
The metaphor of a way is really, at the basic level, how do you get from point A to point B? There's a way to get there.
Yeah.
When you're on a hiking trail, every once in a while there's a little smaller trail that'll jet out.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And maybe a little overgrown or something, because not as many people have gone that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess the biblical authors take for granted that there is a way for humans that is the right way. Namely, by right, meaning it's a way of doing right, righteousness, meaning right by God and right by people. Mm-hmm. And when you're pursuing righteousness and justice, like which is called the way of the Lord here in Genesis 18, 19, that will lead to a particular kind of path. Mm. And it will make you recognize and avoid paths that are not that way. And that's what's called the way of the wicked, which leads to ruin. And then the way of the righteous, which is the way of the Lord, that leads to life. Mm. That's the image. So it's about wisdom and discernment, which is so much of what the Sermon on the Mount has been about. Mm. Cultivating a moral compass so that one's will and desire begins to align with heaven's desire as expressed through Jesus' teaching, and it will lead one on a particular way that sometimes will lead you on the less traveled way. And isn't it interesting that the first time the word way is used in the Hebrew Bible, what it's talking about is the way in and the way out of the Garden of Eden. So the Hebrew word for way, there's many words for path or road or way, but the most basic one is derek. It's first used in the last line of the Eden story in Genesis 3:24. So God exiled the human out, and at the east of the Garden of Eden, God stationed the cherubim and the flaming sword that was turning itself over, whirling back and forth, to keep the way to the tree of life. Hmm. So there's a way to life.
There's a way.
Yeah.
But it's guarded by
a
cherubim
and
a flaming sword.
A wall of fire that is a sword and beings, heaven and earth beings.
Yeah.
Because they're
spiritual creatures.
The cherubim, remember, are multiform animal human hybrid types of things.
Okay. So the first way that we're introduced to in the Bible is a way to life.
Yep.
But that's guarded.
Yeah. This way is simultaneously a way to death. Because if you're taking it outside the garden, it's back to dust and death.
Yeah, okay.
But if you're going the reverse direction by the fiery sword and the bouncers, it's the way to life. The way to life is to go through the fire, past the danger, into life. But to go out on that way is to leave the tree of life. And actually, this connects forward to something that's stated in the next story, which connects us finally to the gate or the door. What God tells Cain, when Cain is sitting there contemplating God's favor on his brother, as they're offering their sacrifices, and the question is, where are they offering their sacrifices?
Yeah.
They're right outside the garden, because it just says at the end of Genesis 3 that God exiled them out of the garden proper. So when God says to Cain, hey, listen, if you do good right now, as you face this moment of decision, won't there be exaltation? But if you don't do good, sin is a croucher at the door. And the Hebrew word's petach, which literally means opening.
Okay.
The verb patach means to open. So it's the most general word that can refer to gates and can also refer to doors.
Okay.
So somehow they're near a door, and they're offering their sacrifices near a door, and sin is a crouching animal-like thing that wants to get you. So what this story begins is a whole series of cycling motifs of different stories that replay the Eden story that have a moment of decision or some place where there's a door. And where if you go in the door, there's life. And if you go outside the door, there's ruin. It's really fascinating. The next place this appears is with the ark, Noah's ark.
Okay.
And when God is describing the ark in the little short description of how he's supposed to make it, there's a big emphasis on put a door in the side of the ark. It's the same word, petach. Mm. And when God says is, I'll make my covenant with you, this is in chapter 6, and you will enter the ark It begins a long sentence, you and your wife and your sons and your animals for the preservation of life. So it's very clear. You go in the ark with the animals, and when you are in this little refuge with a bunch of animals living at peace, there's life. Hmm. But outside the door, it's going to be the decreation. The door of Lot's house is a big emphasis in the story of his goes inside and out the door. And
they're guarding the door.
Guarding the door. The two angels are standing inside the door.
Mm.
That's a full-on Eden image in the Sodom Gomorrah story.
Really?
You have a guy
inside
the house with these two angels.
Okay.
Lot, yes. And as long as he's inside the door, they're safe. Mm-hmm. But outside, it's nighttime. It's dark. And there's a bunch of guys, right, who want to violently abuse the people inside the door.
Mm.
So Lot goes out the door and he almost gets hurt. And then the two angels posted at the door inside open it, grab him and pull him inside, close it, and then they strike everybody outside the door with blindness.
Okay. It all happens at the door.
It all happens at the door.
Yeah.
Yep. What's wonderful is in the Eden story, it's multiple cherubim who are guarding the way.
Yeah.
And then in the next story, you hear about the door.
Yeah.
In the Sodom and Gomorrah story, it's the two angels guarding
the door.
The door, not the way. So it shows that the narrator of the Sodom and Gomorrah story has seen the angels, the way, and the door in and out of Eden and has combined them now into one image. Passover, it's all about the door.
The blood on the door.
And the blood on the door. Don't go out the door. You go inside the door. There's life outside the door. And then there's the tabernacle. And the door, the entryway to the tabernacle is sometimes called a door, petach, but also sometimes it's called the gate, the sha'ar. And there at the door, sacrifices are offered so that the righteous representative who's covered by the blameless life of the substitute can then take the life of the substitute through the blood, the priest, and then can go in through the door into life. So that all of that is a whole design pattern in the Hebrew Bible. And for Jesus to draw the road and the gate together, one leads to ruin, one leads to life, is for sure drawing on that whole network of ideas.
So life as a journey is a universal idea, but the Hebrew Bible has its own way
of— kind of tweaking or developing that image. Yeah,
developing that image in a rich way around the Garden of Eden and around the place of refuge, the house of refuge, the path of life.
Yeah, the way to life.
And in the Bible, the place of life is the garden.
That's right. It's the heaven on earth.
And later represented as the holy place in the tabernacle.
Yep. But then also in these moments of when darkness comes over a human community and there's ruin and destruction outside, God will provide little Eden-like refuges in the house.
And that's Passover.
And that's Passover, or that's the, Lot's house.
Mm.
There is an ultimate gate that leads to ultimate life and the road to it. That's the Eden life. And then outside of Eden, there are also these momentary Eden-like refuges for life that can shield you from the gate or the door that leads to ruin. And I guess you would say Lot's house becomes an Eden-like refuge, or on Passover, the house is like Eden. But it's not full Eden, but it's a little taste of Eden. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to bring it all the way back around, Jesus is depicting his communities and the way of life that he's inviting his followers to embark upon as a small, constricted road. Actually, ooh, this is cool. That word constricted, well, that's my translation.
I don't recognize that in any translation ever.
Yeah, the NIV says, for the gate is small and the way is narrow.
Oh.
So you have the small gate.
Small gate.
And a narrow path.
And that's the word you are translating constricted.
Constricted. So this is the word, it's pronounced tethlemene, but it comes from the word thlibo. So the Greek word means to oppress, literally to squeeze something.
Okay.
And to constrict it.
Okay.
To make it small.
Okay. To force it to be small.
But it's the one of the normal words to talk about oppression. Namely, when somebody's doing you wrong or being unjust or harming you, that's called being oppressed. You still have the metaphor in our word oppressed.
Pressed down.
Being pressed, squeezed.
Oh.
And this is the main word that Jesus will use to describe what will happen to Israel if they reject his teachings. So here's a couple things. One is in the parable of the four soils, when Jesus talks about the seed, his word is like the seed being sown on different soils. And the seed that gets sown on the rocky ground that takes root quickly and sprouts, but then withers. He interprets that as somebody who hears the word that Jesus is saying. He immediately receives it with joy. Sweet, I'll follow Jesus. Awesome. But it has no root. So when philipsis, it's the same word as a noun, when constriction comes, which he calls persecution, arises, he immediately falls away, just like Peter. In other words, he uses a word to describe a path that is literally squeezed, that is small, but it's also a word that we'll talk about when Jesus' disciples meet resistance and persecution around them. Isn't that interesting?
It is. And it ties back to the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount when he said, blessed are those who are persecuted.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So the narrow way of Jesus will lead one into social situations that you're going to be uncomfortable because it's such a counter way of life that there will be moments when people will resist the type of choice you're making.
So this word is not just denoting how narrow.
Yeah.
Like there's not a lot of walking room here.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually also denoting that there's a...
That constriction will come
I'm getting pressed in.
Yeah.
I'm experiencing suffering a little bit.
And paradoxically, the way to life now for Israel will be through a road that feels like death. The constricted road.
Painful road.
Painful road will lead to life, and the easy road will lead to ruin. The way back to Eden forces you to go by that sword and those bouncers. A test. There's a moment of decision where you're going to have to surrender what you think is the good life to embrace ultimate life. So that's the door and the path. Wide is the gate, and also broad is the road that leads to ruin. And those who enter through it are many. How narrow is the gate and constricted for the road that leads to life, and those who find it are few. This imagery of the many and the few has a long afterlife in the history of Christian discussion, theology, and parting of the ways of denominational traditions. The saying has been at the center of a lot of intense conversation throughout Christian history. That, at least I just want to draw attention to that. The many and the few. So when I first started reading the Bible and the teachings of Jesus, the framework that I was given was Jesus' teaching about how to go to heaven after you die.
Yeah.
And so when he puts the decision in front of people, that's the main decision that he's facing people with, is make a choice about me, and that will determine whether you go to heaven or hell after you die. And Jesus does talk about heaven and hell, but he talks about it in a different way if you really pay attention to how he talks about it. And I'm not going to talk about hell right now because he doesn't say that here. What he says is ruin. The two roads lead to either life or the road to ruin. It's the word apoleia, which means to come to one's undoing. So apaluo means to release from. but it means to have been cut loose from one's organizing purpose.
Hmm.
To released from the thing that makes one whole.
Hmm.
Ruin. So destruction is that's what destruction is. So if I make a vase,
okay,
and it's made to hold plants, if I drop it on the floor, it is ruined. It can't fulfill its purpose anymore. It's been loosed from the thing that held it together in the first place.
Okay.
The word appears one more time in the Gospel of Matthew, and it's when the woman pours an expensive oil on Jesus. And what the disciples say is, why this apoleia? And what they're talking about is the wasted oil. So why are you using this for something apart from its purpose? You're ruined the purpose, which is to make you smell good. But now you're using it, pouring it all out, and they say it could have been sold, the money could be given to the poor. So that's actually a wonderful example of this word, because you wouldn't use the word, why did you destroy it?
Why? Yeah, because they used it for a purpose.
Yeah.
But they thought the purpose was actually making it lose its value and wasn't worth,
yeah,
like spending it.
That's
that
right.
Way.
That's right.
So they called it a,
yeah,
apoleo.
Apoleia.
Apoleia.
Yeah. Why this apoleia? And again, it's the same exact word that Jesus uses. Why is the gate broad as the road that leads to apoleia? And waste.
Waste.
Is maybe one way to think about it. In other words, it would be the waste of a human life.
Yeah.
Human life is designed for something. The biblical authors take that for granted, so does Jesus, to image God through relating rightly to God and rightly to neighbor.
Yeah.
And when a human life doesn't flourish towards that end, it is apoleia. It's a waste. It's a ruin. So Jesus is warning Israel of his day that they could make a choice that would lead to apoleia, to a waste of Israel's calling in the world, ruin.
Yeah.
And Jesus sometimes reflects optimism about how Israel will respond. So for example, in Matthew chapter 8, when he looks at the Roman centurion, and he says, whoa, this guy has faith more than any faith I've found in Israel. And so he celebrates and he says, I tell you, many will come from the east and the west and recline at Abraham's table with Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven.
It's going to be many.
Yeah, many. Many will come. Later in Matthew, he's talking about what's going to go down in Jerusalem on Passover weekend. And he says, the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to be a servant and to give his life as a ransom for many. And then the whopper is actually also in John, where he says, you know, the time of judgment is coming for the ruler of this world to be cast out. This is John chapter 12, verse 31. And he says, and if I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself.
So that's many.
That's many, you know, yeah. And he's developing in these teachings a line from the Suffering Servant poems of Isaiah that say after, this is Isaiah 53:11, after the servant has given his life for many, he says, the poem says, my servant, the righteous one, will declare the many righteous, and he will bear their sins. The many.
The many.
So that's where this word many comes from.
Okay.
It's from the Isaiah poems. And Jesus often talks about the many that will be brought into the kingdom. But other times, he'll flip it. Like in here with the gate, many are going to choose the road to ruin. Few will find life. Or like in Matthew 22:14, where he says, many are called, but few are chosen. So it's like, well, which one is it, Jesus?
Yeah. Will there be many or few?
And I think this, just to name this, I think what this shows is that Matthew is preserving the teachings of Jesus, and there are teachings of Jesus that sometimes frame it one way and sometimes say it another way, which I think should humble us to say Matthew hasn't necessarily have as one of his goals to provide us a systematically worked out view of the question we want to ask, which is very good, which is it many or few that are saved at the end of history? And it doesn't seem like Matthew's tried to provide us with like a slam dunk unified statement. He has preserved sayings of Jesus that seem to frame it in different ways, in different occasions. That's one thing.
Okay.
Second thing is, what is the ruin that Jesus is warning about? What's the road? What is the ruin at the end of the road? What is that waste? So this is fascinating. This was Dale Allison in his Matthew commentary that drew my attention to this. The other set of teachings where Jesus uses this word many, about the many and the ruin that awaits the many, is in a speech that he gives, like right before Passover weekend when he's executed. And it's in Matthew 24, his disciples come to him, and they've been going in and out of the Jerusalem temple, and they're like, you know, all like googly-eyed, like, wow, look at the beautiful temple and the walls and the buildings. And Jesus says, yeah, this is all going to burn. It's all going to burn. And, you know, the assumed context is there's going to be a clear, very clear group that's going to burn all this down. It's the Roman Empire that's mm-hmm. occupying our land.
Which is going to happen in a few, like a decade from
then. Yeah,
it's
literally going to happen in a few decades.
A few decades. Okay.
And Jesus predicted it. In other words, if Israel was to embrace the way of Jesus and live by his teachings, it's the way of peace. And why did Jerusalem burn to the ground? Because there was one group, not all, but one group and coalition within Israel that believed that violent revolution against Rome was the only way forward for Israel. Mm. And it led to ruin for that generation. And that's what Jesus said would come. And so his response, you know, in saying that the temple's going to be destroyed and so is Jerusalem. And then as he goes through, he starts talking about how many of this generation of Israel are going to go that way. So in Matthew 24, Jesus answered and said, hey, watch out, man, that don't let anyone mislead you, for many will come in my name saying, hey, me, I'm the Messiah, and will mislead many. So there will be false representatives saying, well, you know, I know Jesus said turn the other cheek, but really?
But it's time to throw down.
It's time to throw down. Verse 10, at that time, that is in the fall of Jerusalem, many will fall away and betray each other and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and mislead many because of lawlessness, literally abandoning the Torah, living without Torah, that will increase and the love of many will grow cold. In other words, this word many appears more in this speech than anywhere else in the Gospel of Matthew. So when Jesus says many are those who go down the road that leads to ruin, within the narrative world of Matthew,
that's Israel of his day, is the many.
Yeah, Israel's on a crash collision course.
With the Roman Empire.
With the Roman Empire, and Jesus is predicting it right here, and he's saying many are going to go that route. But if you embrace my way and go through my gate, that outcome could be avoided. And that's the decision.
That's interesting.
That the sermon places in front of Israel in his day.
And so when we take it back to maybe our question, the modern question of who's in or who's out, who's going to be a part of heaven, if you want to say it that way, or the kingdom of God, the new creation, I am just reminded of the parable of Jesus, of the field, and like...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that has the wheat.
There's wheat
and then plants sown in that there. Look exactly like wheat, but that aren't wheat.
But then some enemy comes and like plants weeds, and they're growing together and they look the same. And the disciples are like,
or the servants of the farmer come.
They're like, hey, we should take out the weeds.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but you can't tell them apart, can you? So like,
let God do that.
Let God do that at the end.
Yeah,
at the harvest. And so as much as we want to be like, who's in, who's out, who's the many, who's the few, how does it cash out, that parable kind of rings in my ears of like, we need to be careful of our judgment.
That's right. Yeah, so maybe two ways to respond for the moment are this teaching of Jesus isn't aimed at answering that question. It's maybe relevant to how we think of it, but there are other places where Jesus celebrates the many that will participate in the kingdom of God, at the table of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so this saying seems to be dialed in to the specific context of Jesus' audience. And if we want to ponder its wisdom for our age, we should recognize he didn't say this to answer a question about the eternal destiny of his listeners. it might be relevant to that, but it's not, you can't just copy and paste his answer, you know, from one to the other.
Mm.
And then second, if we do want to get wisdom about that question from the teachings of Jesus, you need to consider all of his teachings, not just a few. Mm. You need to include the many.
The many teachings.
Not just the few.
But there also is wisdom about what is the way of life.
That's right.
Yeah, and the way of life is a life that it's a time going to feel oppressed, constricted,
yeah,
isolated,
yeah,
lonely. You're not on the party bus all the time, yeah, on the broad road.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that there's something there that that we need to internalize.
Yeah. Yeah. So whether it's in cultures that glorify violence,
hmm,
the way of Jesus will not just seem backwards, but offensive. In cultures that celebrate whatever sexual liberation, the way of Jesus will look very backwards and oppressive.
Prudish.
Prudish, yeah. In cultures that celebrate unbridled accumulation of wealth, the way of Jesus will look like you're stifling a flourishing economy, you know, or whatever. It's just, it's
bunch of hippies.
It's a counterintuitive, yeah, right? It's a counterintuitive way that will lead to pressure from the outside and forcing you to be very discerning moment to moment as to what the way and the gate is. Lord, have mercy on us.
Mm.
Broad is the way, wide is the gate, it leads to ruin. Narrow is the gate, constricted is the way that leads to life.
You know, this makes me think about how much we need community. When you think about the wide gate, the party bus gate,
yeah,
where everybody is, everybody's having such a good time, and then you think about the narrow way, where you're lonely and it's challenging and it's hard. This makes me think I need to be able to kind of look over and see that somebody who's having the same kind of experience can say, oh, you too?
Yeah. That's a good reminder that even though it is the narrow way and it will feel lonely, we're not doing it alone. It's not the party bus.
But I got a partner.
There you go. Yeah. Let's not forget that we're doing this together, even though the path is narrow. I love that. Next week, we look at the second image that Jesus puts in front of us to think about the choice. And it's an image about wolves in sheep's clothing, about good fruit and bad fruit and false prophets.
Because not everybody who I send out or who thinks they're sent out by me is a legitimate representative of me. There will be people who say they represent me, but rather they don't do the desire of my Father, and we're not in covenant relationship.
That's next week.
Bible Project is a crowdfunded nonprofit. We exist to help people experience the Bible as a unified story that leads to Jesus.
Everything we make is absolutely free because of the generous support of thousands of people just like you.
Thanks for being a part of this with us.
Hi, this is Jerry
and Malachi,
and we're from San Antonio, Texas.
We first heard about the Bible Project through friends at our church.
And we use the Bible Project for gaining a deeper understanding of the scripture that we read every day.
Our favorite thing about the Bible Project is how approachable it is for people of all ages and walks of life.
We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus.
And we're a crowdfunded project by people like us.
Find free videos, study notes, podcasts, classes, and more at BibleProject.com.
Hi, this is Tyler, here to read the credits. John Collins is the creative producer for today's show. Production of today's episode is by producer Lindsay Ponder, managing producer Cooper Peltz, producer Colin Wilson. Stephanie Tam is our consultant and editor. Tyler Bailey is our supervising engineer. Frank Garza and Aaron Olson edited today's episode. Aaron Olson also provided the sound design and mix for today's episode. Nina Simone does our show notes, and Hannah Wu provides the annotations for our app. Original Sermon on the Mount music by Richie Cohen, and the Bible Project theme song is by Tense. Tim Mackey is our lead scholar, and your hosts, John Collins and Michelle Jones.
Jy is ingeskakel by die ABBA-program Krag van die Bybel. Krag van die woord van God in ons lewens. Deur sy gees wat in ons werk. Kan ons lees en kan ons die getuienis hoor van die Here en kan ons weet dit is sy woord vir die lewe. En dan kom hierdie moeilike woorde van Jesus wat Tim en John oorgesels het ook nou en dit ook vir ons op 'n ander wyse ook weer verhelder het en nuut maak. Hierdie woorde wat Jesus sê, gaan deur die nou poort in, want breed is die pad en wyd die poort wat na die verderf lei. En daar is baie wat daardeur binne gaan. Maar hoe nou is die poort en hoe smal die pad wat na die lewe lei. En daar is min wat dit vind. Wanneer mens regtig gaan stilstaan en jy luister weer na hierdie woorde, dan ruk dit die mens nogal. Wat beteken dit? Dat die Here sê, daar's min wat daar ingaan, dis moeilik. Dis nou. Moeilik beteken eintlik in hierdie sin saamgepers. Dis die Griekse woord, saamgepers. Wat eintlik beteken maar moeilik. Wat bedoel Jesus wanneer hy dit sê? Kom ons dink weer en reflekteer oor hierdie woorde vir Jesus en loop die pad saam met hom, want so dikwels is dit so ryk en vol en kan ons ook die betekenis in die res van die bergrede kry. Jesus sê, gaan deur. Dis die eerste plek een opdrag, nee. Gaan deur. Deur die nou poort. Om die pad van die lewe te kies, die koninkryk. Om in die koninkryk in te gaan. En ons kan ook in hierdie sin kyk na Matteus 18, waar Jesus met Jesus se woorde, 18 vers 3 en 4, waar die Here sê, so duidelik vir ons, ek sê vir julle, as julle nie verander, en soos kindertjies word, en sal julle beslis nie in die koninkryk van die hemele ingaan nie. Wie homself dus gering ag, soos hierdie kindjie, hy is die belangrikste in die koninkryk van die hemele. Dis moeilik, vir ons as groot mense, volwassenes, ouer mense, om soos 'n kindjie te word. Dis wat Jesus dan sê in Matteus 18, en dan sê hy in Matteus 18 ook, dit is veel beter om vermink of krepel die lewe in te gaan, as om twee hande of voete te hê en ewige vuur gegooi te word. En as jou oog jou laat struikel, ruk dit uit, gooi dit van jou weg. Dis vir jou beter om met een oog die lewe in te gaan, as om twee oë te hê en Gehenna met sy vuur gegooi te word. En dan kan ons ook in hierdie verband ook net kyk wanneer dit gaan oor hierdie moeilike pad en die keuses wat ons moet maak. Dan kom hierdie ryk jong man by die Here wat regtig opreg probeer het om die wet net soos die fariseërs uiterlik na te kom. En lees ons daar, iemand het aan Jesus gekom en gevra, Meester, watter goeie dinge moet ek doen, sodat ek die ewige lewe kan verkry? En hy het hom geantwoord, hoekom vra jy my uit oor wat goed is? Daar is net een wat goed is, as jy die lewe wil binne gaan, moet jy die gebooie nakom. Hy vra hom watter, Jesus antwoord, jy mag nie moord pleeg nie, jy mag nie egbreuk pleeg nie, jy mag nie steel nie, jy mag nie vals getuig nie, eer jou vader en jou moeder en jy moet jou naaste lief hê soos jouself. Die jongman sê vir hom, dit het ek alles nagekom. Wat kom ek dan nog kort? Jesus het vir hom gesê, as jy volmaak wil wees, gaan verkoop jou besittings, gee dit vir die armes, en jy sal 'n skat in die hemel hê, en kom hier en volg my. Die koninkryk van die hemel en die ewige lewe beteken dieselfde ding. En as die Here sê, ons kan nou in die koninkryk ingaan, hy het gekom, so dat ons kan ingaan, dan weet ons dat ons nou reeds die ewige lewe dus kan kry. En dit is om 'n skat in die hemel te hê, waarvan Jesus ook in Matteus 19 vers 21 praat. Wat hierdie ryk jongman kort gekom het, is presies waaroor Jesus hier in die bergrede praat. Om op die nou pad te gaan, en deur die nou poort, en die moeilike pad, die saamgepaste pad, wat waar min ingaan en loop op en lewe, is juist om soos 'n kindjie net eenvoudig sy lewe te ontvang, sy geregtigheid. Jesus sê vir die ryk jongman, gaan verkoop alles, volg my, kry hier die volmaakte lewe soos die Vader dit het, om volmaak soos die Vader te wees, kry dit by my, ek gee jou, dis my lewe wat ek vir jou gee. En dit, liewe luisteraars, dis wat die Here gee. Hy gee sy eie lewe. En daarsonder kan jy en ek nie op hierdie pad, nie deur hierdie poort gaan nie, en op die pad gaan nie. En dit is wat dit so moeilik maak. Die Here sê baie duidelik vir ons, eintlik in hierdie woorde ook, dat, soos in die res van die bergrede, dit gaan nie oor uiterlike godsdienstige dade nie. Dit gaan nie alles wat jy sê, wat jy doen, wat reg is en verkeerd, wat nie doen wat verkeerd is nie, maar het gaan dit wat binne in jou hart aangaan. Hoekom jy dinge sê, en hoekom jy dinge doen? Wat is in jou hart? Is daai hart die hart wat die Here vir jou gegee deur sy gees? Of is dit jou eie denke, jou eie lewe, om die dinge, die pad wat maklik is, te kies? Ons het groot geword met hierdie verstaan van die nou weg, as dit wat jy moet doen. Ouers vir kinders gesê, daai is die maklik, is die wye pad, hierdie is die moeilike pad, die nou weg. Maar baie keer het ons bedoel, dis jou optrede, dis jou dade. Maar die hele bergrede sê, ja, dit gaan oor jou dade, natuurlik. Maar dit gaan oor jou dade wat uit jou nuwe hart in Jesus uitkom. Dit wat jy ontvang het van hom. Dit gaan nie oor die geregtigheid van die fariseërs nie. Daarmee gaan jy nie baie ver kom nie. Dit is eintlik maklik. Dit vat ja, alles om die regte dinge te doen. Maar eintlik is dit maklik. Die moeilike is om soos 'n kindjie die lewe van Jesus te ontvang. Uiterlike dade, ja, jy moet soms op jou tande kners en vasbyt en die regte ding doen. Maar as jou motief in die hart nie dit is wat die Here vir jou gegee het nie, deur sy gees, dan is dit jouself. En Jesus het juist, wanneer hy gepraat het oor seks, en hy het gepraat oor die huwelik, en hy het gepraat oor moord, en oor ontrouheid in die huwelik, en om kwaad te praat van ander, en vir iemand te sê, raka of jou dwaas, sê dus, dit gaan altyd oor die hart. Wat is in jou hart? Wat bedink jy? Wat begeer en vrees jy? Wat dryf jou? Dis die nou poort. Want my liewe luisteraar, dit is nie maklik om regtig eerlik te wees met wat in jou eie hart omgaan nie. Selfs dit, om in geloof, die geloof wat ek kan vang van die gees, wat God vir my gee, sodat ek nie roem nie, sê Paulus in Efesiërs 2 vers 8, om juist uit daai hart uit, te kan dit doen wat ek moet doen, en sê wat ek sê. Hebreërs brief stel het, lees ons dit so duidelik, waar die skrywer dit vir ons gee, die woord van die Here, dat sonde is misleidend, jy sien dit nie makkelijk raak nie, jy wil dit eintlik nie raak sien nie, dit is moeilik, dit is nou, om waarlik volmaak te wees soos my Vader, hoe anders kan ek dit doen, as dat ek dit juist van hom ontvang, om so te kan lewe, dis hier die lewe van hom, waarmee ek in die koninkryk kan ingaan, die nou poort in die pad, jou geregtigheid, wat jy van Jesus ontvang, wat jou hart verander, meer as die uiterlijke, meer as net eenvoudig die fariseers, baie meer, wat gebeur in jou hart, dink bietjie daar oor, wat is die dinge waar oor jy dink, wat in jou rondrol, die dinge wat jy bang is voor, die dinge wat jy graag wil hee, andere moet doen, en wat moet gebeur in jou leven, dit is waar oor het gaan, en dit kan alleen, ontvang word dier geloof, ons gaan nou eerst luister na muziek, bly gerus ingeskakel, welkom terug by die program Krag van die Bybel, die krag van die woord van God, en ons praat hier oor hierdie woorde van Jesus, gaan hier die nou poort, maar dan sê hy dit duidelik, die wye poort en pad is makkelijk, baie gaan daarop in, en baie lewe so, die nou poort, is moeilik, saamgepers, en baie min gaan daarin, baie min gaan daarin, omdat dit vir ons so moeilik is, om hierdie lewe te ontvang uit Jesus, en daaruit te lewe. Nou poort, dit het nog om my teruggebring, weer by Josia 1, waar die Israelite dan deur die Jordaan rivier in die beloofde land ingaan, en sê die Heere vir Josia en Josia is 1, die Heere sê vir hom eintlik 3 dinge, hy sê vir hom, jy moet dapper wees, vertrou die Heere, maar dan sê hy vir hom ook, maar die woord, Godse woord, die Torah, die wette en die profete, die wette, in Josia se tyd was het, die wette wat hy reeds ontvang het toe, en dan al die boeke van Moses, alles, die woord, wat die Heere vir hom gegee, dat hy die belangrike, die gesag van die woord, moet herken, en dan, wanneer die Heere dit vir hom sê, in hoofstuk 1, dan sê hy, moet nie daarvan links of rechts afwyk nie, en dan denk ek in hierdie woorde van Jezus van die nou weg. Jy kan eindelijk dit sien as in die nou weg, wanneer jy die nou poort gaan en op hierdie pad loop, die nou pad, dan is daar weerskante afgronde. Dit is eindelijk afgronde, maar het lyk of dit makkelijk is. Een makkelijke paaie, as jy die makkelijke pad, die wye pad wil kies. Maar om op die nou pad te bly, daarin moet jy die Heere vertrou, en daarom kan jy dapper wees, en om te vertrou in alle omstandighede, en kan jy weet dat hy sy woord vir jou gee, dat jy uit sy woord kan lewe, en dan die derde ding wat hy sê, is hy bly by ons vir altyd. Altyd. Wees dapper en sterk, moet nie paniek bevange wees nie, sê die Heere vir Josia, moet nie jou laat afskrik nie, want die Heere, jou God, is by jou, ooral waar jy gaan. As ons dus dink, hierdie lewe wat ons ontvang by die, van die Here en sy gees in ons en hy bly by ons altyd. En wanneer ons sy woord ontvang, dan sê die Here, loop nou op hierdie pad, gaan deur hierdie hek, loop op hom. In die Here, nie in jou eie denke nie, jou eie wil. Maar kry die wysheid van die Here, want hy is by jou. Sy woord. En loop daarop. Weerskande kan jy afval. Moenie links of rechts draai nie. Ons kan dit net, daar is soveel wyses wat jy net die maklike pad kan kies. Dit lyk, Psalm sê, dit lyk of dit reg is, maar dit is verkeerde pad. Dit lyk vir jou, dis eindelijk die ding wat jy moet doen. En jy kan dit baie keer ook so met een godsdienstige sausie ook oorgooi. Baie maklik. In ouers verhouding met hulle kinders ook. In die huwelik, vriende, geloofsgenote, mense wat saam met jou werk. Dit is so makkelijk dat ons van die pad af kan gaan, want ek wil aanvaarding hê van mense. En dan is ek klaar van die pad af. Want dan word mense belangrijk. En ek wil please en net allemaal gelukkig hou. Ek kan in die andere afgrond, in die andere kant ook afgaan. Ek wil self in beheer wees. Ek wil hierdie dinge in my hande vasthou. Ek wil dit doen soos wat ek dit wil doen. Om waarlik op die nou pad te loop, is om bereid te wees om jou lewe te verloor, sê Jesus. Dan vind jy dit. Kom ons dink bietjie aan, en ek wil dit graag met julle deel, liewe luisteraars, gebeurtenisse wat gebeur het, pa en sy dochterkie 6 jaar oud, dis sondagochend, die pa kom in die kombuistafel, by die kombuistafel, en hy eet soos wat hy dikwels sondagochende doen, yoghurt met muesli, en een bietjie jening by, en hier sit hy, en hier kom sy dochterkie in, Betty, 6 jaar oud, en wanneer sy so inkom en sy sien haar pa, wat sy weet wat hy gewoonlik doen, maar sy sien hierdie muesli wat boop die yoghurt is, steek sy skielik vas en haar oor is vasgenaal op hierdie muesli. En haar pa kyk op en sien hoe sy dochterkie hier verstaar staan en kyk na hierdie muesli. En die enigste ding wat sy oor haar lippe kry is, ek het gejok. Wat doe die pa nou? Hoe gaan hy om met sy dochterkie? Sy kind? Moet hy sy kind help om hierdie leendoring uit te ruk? Moet het Betty nodig om haar die lewe aan Jesus te gee? Moet hierdie leen demoon uitgedryf word? Moet sy 'n lesing kry oor waarheid en leens? God wil toch nie, mense moet lieg nie, maar die waarheid praat. En onmiddellik is die vraag hier, hoe sien ek die nou pad? Wat is hierdie lewe in die koninkryk? Is dit my moralistiese ding? Hoe kan ek by haar kom? Moet ek vir haar sê, nee man, jy mag nie lieg nie, jy kind van die Here doen dit nie. Soos baie ouers baie keer sê vir hulle kinders. Die pa volg in hierdie geval nie die moralistiese pad, die uiterlike pad, om vir te sê, Betty, jy kind van die Here, vertel mos die leens nie. Daar gaan immers meer aan in Betty se lewe, as om leens te vertel. En so is die pa iemand wat nie net die bloot bid dat die Here sy kind soos 'n toverslag sal verander nie. Nee, hy weet dis die nou pad. En hierdie klein kindjie van hom is besig om te leer. Wat beteken dit? Om uit die Here te lewe. Om op die nou pad te loop. So die pa verstaan nie wat alles in haar lewe gebeur op die oomblik nie. En daarom is dit belangrik dat hy net luister na haar. Maar daar is genoeg dinge, die feit dat sy so vassteek en die ene sy woorde oor haar lippies kom, ek het gejolk. En dan begin Betty haar pa vertel. En hy weet, maar hier is dinge wat gebeur by haar. Hy kyk nie dit uiterlik daarna nie. Die dinge wat sy verkeerd doen nie. Soos ons dikwijls ook na mense kyk. Nee, hy kyk nie dit haar gedrag nie. Hy probeer verstaan wat gebeur hier in haar. Wat is in haar hart? Hoe lyk haar wêreld? Watter situasie was sy hierdie leen vertel het? Wat wou sy bereik? Wat wou sy doen met haar leen? En waar was die Here toe sy gejok het? Om antwoorde op hierdie vraag te kry, met die pa meer verstaan. Hy moet by die story uitkom. Betty, vertel vir papa wat het gebeur. Nie hierdie moralistiese reghelp dadelik nie. Nee. Dis die liefde wat uitkom waarvan Jesus praat. Dis sy lewe, sy geregtigheid. En dan sê sy, ek het by die skool vir Annie wat die een is wat almal regeer, al die ander kindertjies regeer. Ek het vir Annie gesê, ek haat muesli. Want sy het gesê, sy haat muesli en niemand kan van muesli hou nie. En ek het gesê, ek haat muesli. Maar ek weet, papa, ek hou van muesli. Daar eet jy nou en ek hou daarvan. Ek wil ook dit eet. En nou weet ek net, ek het gejok. Ai, so gaan die hart van die vader uit na sy kind. Dit is so, dit gebeur so dikwels in mense se lewens, dat jy verkeerd doen, maar sy weet daar is iets fout. Dit is die lewe. So Betty se maatjie Annie, dit is haar situasie. Sy wil Annie, please, sy wil aanvaar word deur Annie en haar ander maatjies. En wat doen die pa nou daar? Betty, vertel vir papa. Hoekom jy dit vir Annie gesê het? En dan sê sy dit. Annie het gesê, sy haat muesli. En ek het ook gesê, ek haat dit. Want dit is wat sy ook wou hoor. Maar ek het gejok. En nou is dit duidelik vir die pa. En dan roep hy haar nader. En hy hou haar vas. En hy sê vir haar, maar dit is so wonderlik dat jy dit weet. Jy weet mos, kom ons vat dit na die Here toe. Want hy het juist vir ons gesterwe om met ons sonde, maar dan kom ons en ons bring dit na hom toe. Ons gaan sê dit vir hom, want hy het ons lief. En so bid hulle twee saam. Ach, ek kan nog op volgende verhale hiervan vertel. Maar ek deel dit, juist so dat ons kan sien, dit gaan nie op uiterlike pad, wanneer Jesus hier praat, dit gaan baie, baie dieper. Wat gebeur in ons harte? Hoekom doen ons hierdie ding? Hoekom jok ons en al hierdie dinge? Wat is in ons harte? En om dan om te draai en te weet, Here, hier is ek. Iets vir my u lewe gegee, leer my om dit te lewe, Here. Ek is so arm van gees, dors en honger. Gee dat ek dit sal lewe. Dit is die noupad. En dis moeilik. Maar dis makliker net om te kyk na die na die dorings en die vrugte of die vrotvye. En Jesus gaan net hierna daaroor begin praat ook. Ek hoop hierdie een storiekie het julle ook net gehelp om te verstaan dat Jesus praat hier oor ons harte. Min gaan daarin. Nie oor al die goed wat jy doen of nie doen nie. Maar die eerste plek jou hart. Sy gees in jou. Leef hy in jou. Kom na hom toe. Wanneer jy hierdie woord van die Here hoor. Moenie bang wees omdat hy sê min gaan daarin nie. Hy het ook gesê met die saad gelykenis, nee. En maar een deeltjie van die saad wat op goeie grond land. Land die woord van die Here nou op goeie grond. Voel jy die dringendheid aan, want het gaan oor die lewe tot in ewigheid. Kom na hom toe. Gaan in deur die nou poort, want hy nooi jou. Moenie huiwer nie. Moenie dink jy is nie goed genoeg nie. Maar het gaan juist nie oor jou uiterlijke gedrag nie, het gaan eers dat jy na hom te draai en jou hart vir hom gee. Terwyl elkeen hier oor dink, kom ons luister nou na musiek en dan sluit ons hierdie gesprek af daarna. Bly ingeskakel. Welkom terug by die ABBA-program Krag van die Woord. En hierdie woorde van Jesus oor die nou hek poort, nou pad, die breë pad, die breë poort, wat die breë, wat maklik is om in te gaan, maklik om te loop, en die andere een moeilik, wat is hierdie moeilik? Is hierdie moeilik dat jy op jou tanden moet ners om die regte dinge te doen, om die uiterlijke dade, gaan dit daar oor? Nee, dit begin nie daar nie. Dit loop daarop uit, ja. Dit is die vrugte, die vrug van die gees, die liefde, die vriendelijkheid, die geduld, al daar die vrug van die vrugte van die gees. Ja, dit is deel van hierdie lewe wat die Here dan gee. En dit is die, wat is die nou weg? Die breë weg, is nie net om al die verkeerde dinge te doen nie, maar, want in hierdie bergrede, rig Jesus om vooral in die eerste plek op die fariseers en die leiers, maar dan ook, op sy eie disciples, sy eie volgelinge, wat dan luister hier met die bergrede. So hierdie pad, hierdie nou pad, is die pad van geregtigheid in die Here. Sy geregtigheid, wat jy ontvang. Sy lewe, met ander woorde, wat jy ontvang. Sy pad van geloof, waar Jesus vir my in hierdie lewe, waar al die kwaad, en die sonde, en die stikkendheid, en al hierdie dinge is, waar hy my leer, om hierdie lewe deur die gees te leef, dis nie nou pad, dis moeilik. Nie moeilik, omdat ek hierdie dinge moet doen nie, moeilik, om my ou self te laat gaan, my lewe te verloor, en om te volg. En dan hierdie nou pad, waar een weerskant in die afgrond is, wat die mens so makkelijk kan val. Afgronde, hoe ek mense vrees, en dan pleaser wil wees, om alles wat mense wil hee, te gee, want so bewaar ek die vrede, en dan hou hulle van my, en dan voel ek ook goed. Dis die makkelike pad. Dis die afgrond, eintlik. Maar hy lyk so maklik en gelyk. Dis die pad wat lei na vernietiging. Want mense is dan jou God en nie die Here, Here nie. Aan die ander kant, ek wil God speel. Ek wil in beheer wees. Ek wil hê ander moet sien hoe goed ek doen en hoe belangrik ek is. Jesus sê die nou weg om deur die geloof te lewe in sy koninkryk is moeilik. Dis die pad van die pa met sy kindjie, om haar na hom toe te bring, om te luister na haar, want hy weet hoe moeilik dit is en hoe maklik dit gebeur. En hy druk haar nie maar net hier in 'n nuwe gedrag, jy moet dit doen en dit doen en dit doen nie. Kom eers by die hart. En uit die hart uit kom die vrug van die gees. Dit is moeilik om reg te draai van afgode af. Dit is moeilik om weg te draai om ervaring te bekry van mense of aan die ander kant self in beheer te wil wees. Jakobus skryf daaroor in hoofstuk 3 en hoofstuk 4. Hy sê waar kom hierdie rusies vandaan? Dit kom omdat jy in jou harte jou eie dinge wil begeer. Dit is alleen moontlik, liewe luisteraar, om hierdie lewe in die Here te lewe. Wanneer jy dit in geloof deur sy gees ontvang. En dan werk hy in jou deur sy gees en jy dra vrug. Jy dra vrug. Waarvan Paulus dan ook so dit so duidelik beskryf in sy brief aan die Galasiërs in hoofstuk 5 lees ons dit. Hy skryf daar hoe hierdie stryd van die vlees is teenoor die gees. Maar dan sê hy dit ook so. Hy sê, die gees, dan sal julle nie die begeertes van die vlees uitvoer nie, uitlewe nie. Hoe lyk dit wanneer die gees in my werk wat ek ontvang, want dis die lewe van Jesus, dis sy gees. Dan sê hy hierdie woorde in vers 18, as julle deur die gees gelei word, staan julle nie onder die wet nie. Want die gees lewe in julle. En julle dra die vrug van die gees. Liefde, blydskap, vrede, geduld, vriendelikheid, goedheid, getrouheid, sagmoedigheid, selfbeheersing. En sulke dinge, daar's baie meer. Dit is wat die Here sê, dis die noupad. Dis die aflê van die ou lewe. Die hart, die vlees, die sintuiglike lewe met sy hartstogte en sy begeertes. Dit is gekruisig in Jesus, want jy het sy lewe ontvang. En nou wil ek vra, is jy wat hierdie woorde hoor van die Here? Is jy een van hulle? Is jy bereid om jou ou lewe aan hom te gee? En sy lewe te ontvang? Is jy arm van gees? Ander woorde, jy sê, Here, hier is ek. Ek het niks om vir u te bied nie. Ek is arm. Hoor dan nie, Here. Draai nou na hom. En wanneer jy dit vir hom gee, hy sê, kom, ontvang. Sonder geld. En lewe. Kom met my deur die nou poort en op die nou pad. Want dit is die lewe, dit is die koninkryk. Here, ek kom na u. En ek gee my lewe vir u. En ek lê weer opnuut af alles. Want ek wil net in u lewe. Deur u gees lei ons toch so elkeen wat dit hoor om na u te kom en die gees u gees in hom on haar om een te word met u gees my gees en u gees dis my identiteit ek is u kind Abba Vader dankie vir die lewe. En dankie dat ons met u hierdie nou pad kan loop. Dis die lewe tot U alles heel maak. Dat U U hand oor elkeen hou. In Jesus naam, sy geregtigheid wat ons ontvang het, met groot genade en groot blydskap, loof ons U en dank ons U as ons Vader in die hemel. Amen. Dit was heerlik om weer saam met jou net by die diepte van hierdie woorde van Jesus te kom. Elke keer raak hy ons aan. Sien uit na volgende week wanneer ons weer saamkom. Seën vir elkeen. Tot ziens.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.